You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
I am Melissa Barker. I am the only trauma survivor in the room helping women heal their own trauma. I pivoted the whole company and I said, well, we've got X amount of years of trauma research in our back pocket. We've got lived experience we've been building from. We've got a bench of trauma healers we've been sitting with. Let's make Phoenix available to anyone and everyone that needs it right now, because again, I felt the need to be of service.
I'm probably one of the few people I know who still looks forward to my Sunday newspaper. Not a digital copy that I read on my phone, but the real finger-staining, loud crinkling, section-by-section newspaper. The Sunday paper for me is a treat to be enjoyed while lounging in bed and sipping hot lemon water. So one day when we were going through all of the Only One stories that are being submitted to us, thank you for those, by the way. We love reading them. It was Scott's idea to record and release a few of them occasionally, but always on Sundays, and call them our Sunday edition. And because they're only 30 minutes long, our hope is that you can enjoy them while sipping your morning beverage, going for a walk, or even just enjoying a lazy Sunday at home. Please enjoy today's Sunday edition and be sure to listen every Thursday for a new installment of our Now Normal series. And of course, every Tuesday when we drop another brand new episode of The Only One in the Room. Melissa Barker, we're so excited to have you here. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. You know, I'm in that post-holiday, pre-New Year kind of like what's next moment, but I'm good.
Good. Tell me, Melissa, what is your absolute favorite song to dance alone to?
Oh, that is such a good icebreaker. I'm having that moment where I'm like, what is the title of it? All right. So I guess a former soul cycler.
Okay.
You know, in this new world of 2020, I haven't been to a soul class since March. Mm. But so there's this one song. I cannot remember the name of it. Who is it by? It's something about like shadows and like giants and like getting in there. And it's very like soul cycle upbeat. That's one that I could definitely put on and go crazy on. Also, Maggie Rogers' Back in My Body just speaks to my soul, because I'm all about somatic trauma healing. And I feel like that song is so about the celebration of what it feels like when a trauma survivor gets back in their body and actually gets to be in their lived experience.
That is so perfect. It's so absolutely like, perfect. Thank you.
I've got to remember a title of one of these songs.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I don't think I know that song, so I'll be checking it out.
No, I don't.
You know it, hon?
No,
I don't.
Okay.
I will text it to you.
Please, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
We can groove to that while we're listening to the edit of your episode.
Yes, and it's just beautifully written, and I actually was fortunate enough to meet Maggie a few years ago in San Francisco, and she gave like a private showing of some of her songs, and if I remember correctly, she wrote that around the election, the 2016 election.
That makes sense.
A lot of layers are in there.
A lot of layers. And it's recent too. So that's really cool. Thank you so much for that. I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is the Only One in the Room special Sunday edition. But I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, honey. So today, I'm wearing my Hun hat today. You guys can't see me, but I'm Hun too today.
It is a uniquely wet and rainy day in California
today.
It is.
It stormed here last night. It was crazy.
Like I've never heard in California.
Yeah, actually. It was amazing. I thought it was an earthquake, actually.
Yeah, it sounded like, it sounded like it.
So, but we're here to talk about a lot of things today, but I just want to kind of introduce the subject of trauma. So women are at a much greater risk for negative consequences following traumatic events, but many hesitate to seek mental health treatment as a result of it. Survivors often wait years to receive help, while others never receive treatment at all. And untreated post-traumatic symptoms not only have tremendous mental health implications, but can also lead to adverse effects on physical health. Female survivors may encounter physical symptoms including headaches, gastrointestinal problems, and sexual dysfunction. And although the mental and physical symptoms of PTSD stress can be quite debilitating, trauma is often undiagnosed by health professionals due to lack of training, time, resources, and I'm just going to add caring. Like, I just don't think that people care to go that deep with especially with women. You know, they want to just get to the next case. And here with us today, we have to help us dive into this subject is Melissa Berger, founder and CEO of the Phoenix Project, a digital community that celebrates healing and authentic connections. So welcome, Melissa.
Thank you, Laura and Scott. Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
Oh, we're so happy to have you. Could you start by defining trauma for us? What is trauma?
Absolutely. And that is a great question because the working definition is always a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, I consider trauma anything that happens too fast, too soon. And when it's a shock to the body, and I say the body meaning essentially all the bodies, spiritual body, emotional body, physical body, mental body. And trauma halts action. It causes freeze as a coping mechanism, as a way of to survive, whether the initial incident of trauma or the trauma that is happening after trauma. But it's when something is too fast, too soon, and your system can't process it.
I love that definition because I can feel that actually in my body.
Yes. Exactly. You can feel like where the energy can get stuck or gets frozen or, you know, halts. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then would you mind talking a little bit about your own traumas? Because I think it's just important to set the stage for why you went on this journey of healing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I am a trauma survivor with, when you quantify it, 27 plus years of compounded trauma. And not all of them are these macro moments of, you know, very dramatic Lifetime movie trauma, although I have a couple of those.
Yeah.
There's also these micro moments where there's re-traumatization or something that happened that was close enough to my trauma to bring the traumas back. So my story, I say that I am one of many. I was molested when I was 5 by a cousin. Did not realize it until I was 17 when I was assaulted. I was drugged and assaulted.
Wow.
I was in Kauai on a family vacation and had taken a surf lesson. And the surf instructor was extremely charismatic and told my parents, I'll give her a ride home. Don't worry. Go sightsee. Do what you're going to do. And, you know, I was 17 on a gorgeous island surfing, living like my island dream. And he put something in my drink and then ended up dumping me near a trash dumpster where I had to wander to find my way back. I could have died, you know, there were definitely those. So that's the big trauma. That's kind of like what I would say, the lifetime trauma, right? Yeah. Like, see a lifetime movie there.
Wait,
but it was, yeah.
What happened? Did you press charges? Did he go to jail?
Oh, we did. We did all of it. And this is where, like, and I'm so glad you're asking this question, because I think what's so hard for people to understand with trauma is they tend to think, well, one thing happened and that was it. Well, mm-hmm. really, no, numerous things have happened and they layer up to each other. So yeah. for me at 17, you know, I was assaulted. The first person I called when I got into the condo, no one was there, by the way. My family was on another side of the island. The first person I called was my then boyfriend, and I was drugged. I wasn't making sense. And so he heard, "You just cheated on me," and he broke up with me.
Wow.
And so 17-year-old me, as you know, first love, first everything, right. was just destroyed. And so I immediately took a shower. Wrong thing to do if they're going to have evidence. Oh. And I just internalized everything for 2, almost 3 weeks. Mm. And it actually took one of my best friends. I remember we were at school and she was like, "Something's not right. Like, you came back from Kauai a different person. And I know Mike broke up with you and I know you're sad and these things," but she's like, "I feel like something's not right." And I told her. She was the first person I told. And then she said, "You have to tell your mom and dad." And I went home that night and told my parents. My mom had a very, I mean, any parent would have a strong reaction. And then the police were brought in. But at this point, you know, we were 3 weeks past the incident. Mm-hmm. I did have a rape kit performed. I was taken to the hospital, all those things, which is so much trauma on trauma on trauma.
Yeah.
And started getting, you know, my parents immediately like, "Put her in therapy. Like, we don't know what to do with her, put her in therapy." And that's where the repressed trauma of being 5 and molested came out. So it was almost like 2 hits back to back, because my body suddenly was like, "Well, we've got more to talk about here." Yeah. You know, it was like the little earthquake that got everything to come to the surface. And we went through with the state of Hawaii and found out that 17 was actually considered an adult in Hawaii. Anyone under, I believe at the time it was 14 and under, is what they considered underage rape. I'm blanking on the word right now, but
statutory.
Basically, I was in a minor. Statutory. There we go. Yeah. I wasn't a minor in their eyes, and you know, he said it was consensual. I said it wasn't. It became the classic he said, she said. I became suicidal, as I think anyone would at that age, and you know, for so long, it took me a long time to realize that 17, you're a child. Like, you are still a child. I have a 17-year-old daughter, just turned 17.
Yeah.
And I'm like, she's a child. Like, I was a child. And the state gave me $2,500 to go away.
Wow. Oh,
and Melissa. Said, okay, And I've actually, I've written about it, of like, you know, how do you even quantify something like that? You know, $2,500 to say, "Well, we're washing our hands of this, you know, best of luck, go spend it on something, treat yourself" type moment. Right. Like, it was very bizarre and frankly, like, very patriarchal. Like, it's just like, what is happening?
Yes.
But you know, I deeply internalized a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to just be a teenager again. I wanted to be a kid, you know? So I pushed tons and tons of that down, but because of that trauma and the fact that trauma was really just an open wound I was living with. I also say that trauma survivors move through the world with these scars that no one can see. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was essentially like gutted, but no one could see it. Right.
Right. Right.
And so I did what trauma survivors do. I self-sabotaged. I acted out. I was reckless with my behavior. I was reckless with drinking. I was just doing everything I could to basically outrun it. And through the process of that, ended up losing a sibling to leukemia, which was extremely traumatic. So, you know, this is where the layers start to come in, right? Yeah. You start layering. You can just picture it, brick after brick, right?
Mm-hmm.
But still was not in a place, this when I was 24, was not in a place where I could really heal those traumas. So kept running and running, and ended up actually getting myself, because I'm a very ambitious trauma survivor,
yeah,
got myself into UC Berkeley, where I suffered the last like big physical sexual trauma of my life. And I had a partner at the time that was a PhD candidate, and he groomed me perfectly. He saw this insecure, you know, mm-hmm. wide-eyed, mm-hmm. wanting to prove that I wasn't a fuck-up
right.
woman at the number one public university
yep.
in the world. And he said, you have a story, you have research, you have, you know, you're a scholarly activist. I need to nurture this part of you. And I felt seen and I felt loved and I felt, you know, cared for, and I was thriving academically. I mean, my parents were like, oh my gosh, look at her. She's got a 4.2 at Berkeley. And, you know, it was like, suddenly it was all making up for everything that had happened before, right? Mm-hmm. Like I was the Berkeley student that was publishing and presenting and doing all this stuff. But during that entire time, I was being severely, severely abused, sometimes physical, always psychologically and emotionally.
Mm, yeah.
At times there was sexual assault. And when I finally broke up with him, it was because he had beaten me so badly. He'd actually bitten me really, really badly, to the point that the medics thought he could have taken chunks out of my arm, but I was wearing a leather jacket. They said that literally saved your arm.
Wow.
And I went to UCPD. I went to them and I said, showed him my arm and said, look at this. And they said, oh, it's not our jurisdiction. Mm. It's not our problem. And he proceeded to stalk me for my last 6 months at Berkeley.
Wow.
And again, I outran all this trauma. I mean, it took years and years and years for me to finally say, I can't hold this anymore. It wasn't until I was in my 30s, well into my 30s, that I started to really take all these parts of myself and start to acknowledge them, right? And so that's where I kind of come up with that 27 years. Like I started actually going through and looking at these macro and micro moments of trauma, almost like mini deaths, right. And started to say, okay, I have to acknowledge these ghosts that are in the room.
Man.
So that's my story in a nutshell.
Yeah, that is, you talk about layers on layers on layers, you know, everything you can't see me, but I'm sitting here like with my hand over my heart while you're talking for you, because that is, first of all, thank you for sharing all that. Two women, friends of mine, came to mind immediately when you started talking, and I'm already thinking I need to send them this episode even before it comes out. So that they can hear that they're not alone, that they're not the only ones in the room with this. Obviously, the circumstances aren't exactly the same, but the re-triggering and the, you know, being kind of like hyper successful and putting, you know, just compartmentalizing in a way, in the way that you did. And you wanted to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say the layering. You really you explained how it seems to build on itself and then be very difficult to identify.
Right. Right.
Yes, exactly. It becomes like this, becomes like this jumbled mess of like yarn where you're like, I know that there's a thread that started this thing, but where is it? And it's digging through the muck. You have to really get into every piece and then understand that every one of those incidences is layered with their own traumas. Right. And then, they all just kind of feed off of each other. But it's taken years of therapy and studying and, you know, doing all sorts of my own healing to just to be able to like talk about that, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
This episode's being brought to you by Voyage AC.
Sweet dreams are made of these.
Huh? Oh, I see you like your new silk sleep eye mask kit.
I love it. Mm. I'm so relaxed as soon as I put my mask on. And then the bedtime spray too, so good.
Oh, you mean that magic handcrafted spray that Melanie Apple makes with rose alto and Roman chamomile?
That's right. And don't forget the ylang ylang. I also heard that she adds a dash of vetiver.
Honey, I'm not sure what any of those things are, but that spray does the trick. I'm asleep seconds after you spray our pillows.
It's my favorite thing about bedtime, besides sleeping next to you, hon.
No.
Voyage AC has absolutely everything you need. It has wonderful gifts, faux fur throws, beachwear, diffusers, clutches, beach bags, clothes, gorgeous mix and match gift boxes, and these marvelous new silk sleep eye mask kits. So how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VOYAGEETCIE.com.
Hey, and as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount
what?
To all our listeners right now. That's 10% off everything you buy.
All you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
LaKay Cornell, who I meant to shout out at the beginning of this,
yes,
for connecting LaKay. Us. Hi, LaKay. Love you. She wrote something that I wanted to read about you. The exact vision for the platform, meaning the Phoenix Project, started to crystallize when Barker was in a class for her doctorate program and was triggered by an exercise. She went to the bathroom and completely fell apart, having a full-blown panic attack in the stall. She was unable to remember any of her trauma recovery resources, which caused her to panic even more. She thought, I just need something in my hand now that I can use to get through this. So, one, could you tell us about that and then tell us how you decided to create a community from that moment?
Absolutely. And yes, thank you, LaKay.
Yes.
Like full circle moment. She was writing this article this time last year, which is just wild. But
right. Wow.
I know, right? Like life. Yeah. So I went and pursued a doctorate because I had to understand from an academic standpoint, trauma and trauma healing. At the time when I started my doctorate, I had no idea that's what I was on the path to do. I was like, oh, I'm going to do imposter syndrome. But while I started to dig deeper into imposter syndrome, I realized trauma was such a thread there. And so I kept getting clearer and clearer on trauma. And so I was in a qualitative class where we were told we were doing like a fishbowl experience. So it was you and a student in the middle of the room. And one student was the interviewee and one student was the interviewer. Mm-hmm. And the professor wanted to really showcase like how to get to the meat of an interview fast, basically get to the deep parts, right? And so she put us in this room and we were matched up randomly, and the person I was matched with happened to be a man. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was writing out some legal stuff against UC Berkeley, which I'm sure you can put together with my background.
Yes.
And I was really in my own trauma in a lot of ways. And so like leading up to like going into the middle of this room, my hands were sweaty. My heart was racing. My mouth was dry. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm having all the physical, you know, reactions of feeling not only anxious, you know, because this is doctoral level performing, but also just like, oh my gosh, I have to sit in the middle of this room and he could ask me anything because this professor was not holding healthy boundaries at all. And so when we got into the middle of the room, you know, he started asking questions and the professor realized he knew parts of my personal story. Cause mind you, we had been students together for a few years at this point. And she said, you need to go there. You need to go where you don't want to go and take it there. Uh-oh. And I remember him saying, I don't want to do that to her. And she said, this is your, you know, this, you're a doctoral student. This is what you have to do. And I just knew, I was like, here we go. Mm-hmm. Like go hit the big red button. And so he went there as gently as he could. Poor guy, I think still to this day feels mortified. Right. And I just cracked in front of literally everybody because he had just, the way that he phrased the question, it was like, I just felt naked in front of everyone. And she made me sit there and continue answering through sobs, through shaking, through you know, all of it. And so afterwards I ran to the bathroom and proceeded to have, you know, this full blown panic attack breakdown, the whole thing. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, like all I have is my phone. I left the room. I didn't, you know, tell anybody. All I have is my phone. It's a Saturday. My therapist isn't available. And I could feel the panic. And in that moment, I think I actually even said, there has to be an app for this.
Right.
Genesis, right? And I realized like trauma survivors constantly suffer more trauma after the actual incidents. Like here I was in a doctoral class, a doctoral student, you know, years past Berkeley, years past, you know, being 5 and 17 and those, you know, those key ages. But I was in a bathroom stall having a complete breakdown and couldn't resource and felt beyond alone. And talk about the only one. I was literally like the only one in the bathroom,
right?
Completely falling apart. Yeah. And it sparked something in me where I was like, this is bullshit. Like we suffer our entire lives and we suffer so much past the moments of trauma, but we suffer in silence. Like I don't want that to be that for survivors anymore. I want something to change. And I really started to explore simultaneously with getting more into my doctoral research. I started to explore solutions and started looking around the internet. And I was like, there has to be something. There has to be. And I couldn't find anything. Wow. I found some mental health apps. I found some meditation apps. But I found nothing that was for trauma specifically. Mm-hmm. And so right after everything happened with the Ford and Kavanaugh hearings in fall 2018, I was like, that's it. I'm going to build it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a technologist, but I'm going to build it. Like we can do better. We have to do better. And I think what's interesting after the Ford Kavanaugh hearings is crisis lines reported an increase of calls from 700% to 900% the day after.
Wow.
Because so many trauma survivors
were re-triggered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, and had no resources, had no place to go. Had, you know, we kind of have seen that with COVID too. You know, right when COVID hit, you know, numbers were going off the charts with crisis centers and still I think people, you know, this is still happening, but people don't, we're not taught how to resource trauma. No one sits there and says, hi, you've had a trauma. By the way, the rest of your life is going to suck. Here's how it cannot suck as much.
Right.
You know, like, there's no pamphlet. There's no guide. There's no like, here's a whole space for you. And it's so isolating. And there's so much second guessing that happens when you're a trauma survivor. We tend to actually turn the trauma on ourselves and self-harm in a lot of ways, whether that's physical or mental or spiritual. And I don't want that. I don't want trauma survivors have to be in the dark. So that's what sparked the community piece. I was like, we need to be in community. We need to be seen. We need to be witnessed by people that have been there, because there is an exchange of empathy that happens that you can't get, you know, unless you've been there. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I see it happen all the time in the Phoenix community. Someone will come in, they'll name something and someone will say, I see you. I'm right there with you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm available, you know, and people are able to resource and not do it alone. So that was the spark for the community piece.
That is amazing. That is, oh my goodness, that you went through that experience and then built something so that people don't have to go through that alone. Like that's I can't even think of the right adjective, but I'm so happy that you did that and that this exists. You talked a little bit about, or you mentioned that kind of shadow pandemic, the trauma, mm-hmm. right? During COVID. Mm-hmm. And you pivoted, right? From creating the app to creating an online community because of COVID. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We were March 2020. I was like, I'm like laughing because again, like Kay was writing this article this time last year. Yeah. And I went to this summit in Sonoma in January 2021 or 2020. And, you know, it was March 2020. The world looked very different. And then by March 11th, it was very, very clear.
Right.
We had to pivot. Yeah. I pivoted the whole thing. We were always, so the app that was in development was going to be a community-centered app, but for survivors. And I was only going to have 100 survivors in the beta. We were going to kind of have just this almost like forum piece just to see, like, do people post about their triggers? Do they want to talk about them? Do they want to be held in community?
Mm-hmm.
And then when COVID hit, the developers couldn't cross the threshold. Money I had raised in 2019 shuttered because we weren't technically in the portfolio. So that went dry fast.
Yeah.
Like literally within hours. So I was like, okay.
Wow.
We've got no developers. We got no money.
Yeah.
Money.
Yeah.
About to get real, real. But I also, I felt what was coming from a trauma standpoint. I felt this tsunami of trauma
mm-hmm.
that was about to hit the world. And I was like, we have never been through this much global collective trauma before. Like, I mean, in this lifetime, like we're about to really see some stuff happen because I just knew, again, people are not taught to resource. There's no friendly pamphlet that says, here, you've had some trauma. Let's get through this.
Right.
So I pivoted the company. Actually, I have it forever on my calendar, March 15th, 2020. That whole day is blocked out as what I put as COVID working day.
Uh-huh.
And I pivoted the whole company and I said, well, we've got X amount of years of trauma research in our back pocket. We've got, you know, lived experience we've been building from. We've got a bench of trauma healers we've been sitting with, you know, waiting to basically get them involved.
Right.
Let's make Phoenix available to anyone and everyone that needs it right now. Because, again, I felt the need to be of service, you know, to be this trauma alchemist and say, let's try to help people transcend what's about to happen in the best way we can. And by April, I was building the community. And by May, we were slowly putting people on it. And I actually launched the community platform the week of George Floyd.
Amazing.
So talk about
that's
trauma.
Incredible. Yeah.
Like just right into the sea of trauma.
Right.
And it just, to see people show up and want to be in community, even when they were like, I don't know if I should be in this community right now, you know, was, I still feel like I don't understand what's happened this last year.
Right. Right.
But it was incredible to see the power again of human empathy and this desire for connection.
Mm-hmm.
Through some really, really heavy traumas.
Wow. So let me ask you this. So like, just I'll use myself as an example. I'm an abuse survivor. I'm a sexual assault survivor. I am a Black woman in America, and there's enough said about that. Mm-hmm. When I go onto your site, what do I do? Who do I look for? How do I access what I need?
Absolutely. Thank you, first off, for just even naming those parts.
Yes.
Because I know that there's even trauma in naming those parts, right? When the identity is even there.
Yes.
So when you first come to the website, basically we just say join the community.
Okay.
And step one is come on in and make a free profile. We, at this point, we have no paywall at this point. We have nothing blocking this access to care. A lot of that was because of COVID and the response and saying we can't, you know, build something and then make it inaccessible. So you'll be transferred over to this platform called Mighty Networks because, again, we had to build this thing with money and
Right.
So Mighty is a SaaS community platform. So I built it on there. So you go to Mighty, it'll say Phoenix Community dot, you know, / Mighty Networks. You go in, you make a profile. And it actually, what I love about the probing questions right when you get there, if you choose to answer them, is it says, why are you here? You know, what brought you here? And we have it very clearly stamped at the front. Like, we're changing the conversation on trauma healing and mental health. We believe we rise together. We're doing this in community. And so it's fascinating to see what people write. So you, some people choose to write something, some people don't. And then the next thing that would happen is you would be prompted to an icebreaker question. And our question is very simple. What do you need from your community? And it's, again, choose your own adventure. Answer it, don't answer it. You know, read the answers, don't answer. And then when you get in, you'll see the way that the platform is organized. We have different topics. And then we have niche communities that we've actually set to secret because we want people to feel even more protected, because we do have a Black Women of Phoenix healing community, and we want everyone to feel like this is really your sacred space. And we also have this new feature, which we call Journeys, which actually take people through some of the trauma healing, but from a somatic point. So our whole goal is to help people get back in their body and feel safe in their body. So you kind of have this like buffet, right? Like, do you want to follow a certain topic? Maybe you want to follow the Mindful Monday topic, because every Monday we curate mindful content so people can start their week that way. Or are you, you know, interested in community care, or do you want to follow all of them? So you can opt in to any of the topics you find interesting. You can join any of the communities you feel called to join. And then the journeys, you can basically just choose to take them. They're right now set up as self-paced and self-directed.
Okay.
But we are launching one in 2021 called Talking Trauma with our two lead clinicians that are trauma therapists, amazing, phenomenal trauma therapists and survivors themselves. And that will have an actual community piece to it. So there'll be more of a cohort model. So you'll be in a very small cohort.
Oh, that's great.
We'll give you, so we'll kind of have that group therapy piece, but then also the individual like somatic piece to work on your own. And then you get to come back and be in community. And that's kind of where we're at. You know, people can also just post on the forum. So if you're just called, say, hi, this is what's coming up for me today. I see it every time someone responds and says, you're not alone. I'm right here with you. How can I help? Or what does support feel like today? Or can I call you? Do you, you know, do you want to, or do you want to send me a direct message and we can talk? I recently saw on Christmas, actually, one of our members wrote, I'm sorry, I haven't been active here, but I just lost my parents and I'm basically just gutted right now. And people responded and said, you're not alone. We're right here with you. You know, we have events too. We're actually shifting them a little bit and theming them. So the month of January is going to be focused on self-care. And so we have a community member in Louisiana leading a vision board party.
That's
so you can
just
come and do some visioning together. We've got
some
meditations. We've got a chef out of Ohio that's going to do a baking class. And all of this is will be recorded. So it can be on demand too. So you can either join the live, be in that, you know, have that community connection, or you can watch the replay later and, you know, have these micro moments of your own care to help on your healing journey.
That is so beautiful. And really, I mean, just that you've done this since March 15th and built this community is, I want to say crazy, but it's exactly the opposite. It's sane and grounding, but really incredible. And this time went so fast. I can't believe our interview's like over. But
oh my gosh. Are we already there? Okay, I literally, I swear, Laura, I could talk to you forever. I swear I could just
This is what happened last time. We were on the phone for like almost 2 hours, I think. Okay, so I have a couple more questions. You were getting your doctorate, right?
I am.
Yes.
Yeah, just about there.
So you're close to that. Congratulations. So, pre-congratulations. Yes.
So I'm in the, I've had my exams, my dissertation is written. My committee is just going through and I will hopefully defend in January and then I will be Dr. Barker.
Tell me, Melissa, where can people find you?
Absolutely. So you can find us on Instagram. Our Instagram is I Am Phoenix Rising. The website is IamPhoenixProject.com. And if you go there, that actually connects to everything, Instagram, the community, all of it. And we, you know, we've got stuff in the pipe for 2021 to be only going bigger and better. Mm. But at this point, we're still a free beta. And so I'm telling everybody, I'm like, get in.
Get in now. Yes.
Once you're in, we will honor that you came in as a pioneer.
You know? Is that right? That's really, wow. Yes, I will.
I speak in loyalty. So when I see people come in and be like, I'm going to take, you know, I'm going to bank on this crazy idea of trauma healing and community. I want to, you know, reward that with loyalty and say, thank you for being our first, you know, because I, the thing is that, you know, going back to community, I can't do this work alone. None of us can.
Yeah.
We have to do it in community. And I'm at the place where I'm like, we have got to be alchemists of trauma healing. We've got to call this stuff out of the shadows. We've got to destigmatize it. We've got to make room for the healing. Mm-hmm. We've got to hold space for it. And we need to do it in community and collective care.
Mm. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for your service, for doing this incredible service work for my friends, for me, for my mom. You know, we will all be part of the Phoenix Project community because you've built it and it's there for us. And I just so appreciate that. And thank you for this interview.
Thank you. And Scott, we actually, men are welcome. We're in 2021, we're going to do a lot more for male mental health and male identifying mental health, because we know that trauma does not just sit and, you know, it sits everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I think the question that comes to mind is how to, you know, if you're on the other side and you care for someone who's been through trauma, but you don't understand it.
Yep.
How do you navigate it in a way that can be useful and not hurtful? The thing that you talked about so well was how you have to discover it yourself, but you can't discover it and explain it at the same time. So I can imagine it's difficult without having to change your entire life to just recognize and heal and share that with somebody else.
It is. And like, I don't think everyone should go get doctorates.
Right. But, you know, I would have to say, as far as trauma goes for me in this lifetime, it's the biggest thing that I've learned is how repressed it can be and how long someone can live with it before they're ready to deal with it, which is not something I understood before. It seemed like, well, if something happened to you, why don't you talk about it?
Get over it.
Right.
Yeah. Like,
And I think even Me Too showed us how those things can be triggered, like you said, and come back and then just be overwhelming. And now people like you have helped us develop a deeper empathy for and compassion and awareness that it's relatively rampant. You know, it happens a lot.
It happens a lot. Yeah. And we're suffering in silence, and that's where it just, again, it halts action. So how do you move people through the inaction? You know, we have to be in community. We have to, it's going to take those phoenixes, right? That are like, hey, I have burned down numerous times and risen back up. Let's talk about that.
I think your community also has that idea that only someone who's been through it can really be helpful to somebody who's going through it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely like at one point I shifted saying I'm a survivor to I'm a forward facing survivor. Cause I started to really acknowledge, I mean, this is when I was pitching heavily in 2019 and I was like, wow, within 30 seconds, I sum up 27 years of trauma, you know, like
it's remarkable.
I'm facing it so forward, but like I've done a lot of my own resourcing and stuff to get to that place. And so, you know, how do we help? There's a feedback loop that happens too. When a survivor gets to that place, or a trauma survivor gets to that place of like, being ready to be seen, the first thing they do is they think of the people they need to bring forward with them. Mm. And that's remarkable. Human. Yeah.
I am blown away. And I know people too, that I will send your way.
Please.
It's a beautiful resource.
I'm so fun at dinner party. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I always joke. I'm like the trauma whisperer. I'll be at a dinner party and I'm like, hi, you all have trauma. Let's talk about it. But no, I really believe that this world will look different if people are given permission to heal.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming out and talking. I was just enthralled with the conversation.
Yeah. Thank you, Melissa. The Only One in the Room has brand new interviews for you every week. You won't want to miss our full episodes every Tuesday, Scott Talks on Wednesday, and our new Thursday series, The Now Normal. And twice per month, be sure to catch our 30-minute Sunday edition by subscribing to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Join our Only One in the Room Facebook group if you'd like to tell us about your Only One story. All of us at the Only One in the Room wish you safety and wellness.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.